Tina McLean. The T stands for trouble. I am 56. Today is Thursday, February 25th, 2021. I am in Natchitoches, Louisiana. My conversation partner is Elizabeth, and my relationship to my conversation partner is OSS.
Thank you, Davina. Elizabeth, you want to give us your first and last name, please?
Well, my name is Elizabeth Duke, but I go by Lonnie most of the time. And I am not very far from you, Sabina, because I am merely in Shreveport.
Do you want to give us your age?
Oh, I'm 74.
Okay. And can you state today's date for us?
I could if I knew it.
Thursday, February 25th, 2021. We got your location. And who are you recording here with today?
Oh, I'm recording with Sabina McLean.
Okay. And then you know your relationship to Davina.
OSS partner, yes.
Perfect. Thank you so much. All right. So, Davina, I'm going to have you go ahead and read Elizabeth's bio for us.
Okay. I lived in rural Ohio, a Colorado small town, and a small village in Germany. Shreveport is the first place without snow. I'm a mom and a stepmom to adults, a writer and a history researcher.
Thank you. And I'm going to go ahead and read your bio, Elizabeth. Davina. I teach Latin and Greek and all about the ancient world. While that may seem pointless, the more my students learn about human behavior in different times and places, the more open their minds become to the value of difference. I am pro-choice, not anti-gun, but with background checks. I recognize white privilege, and I believe that healthcare and a certain level of education are rights, not just for the wealthy. I trust experts, but I also read a variety of sources. I love a good conversation. All right, well, thank you both for submitting that information over to us. We're gonna start with Elizabeth for this first question. And then once Elizabeth is done, Davina, you will pick it up and go. Elizabeth, you're gonna take 5 minutes, which I will time you on, to tell Davina your life story.
Oh, but I thought you just had it.
Well, now it's your turn to, you know, go ahead and reinterpret it. So, take a couple seconds there. And then, like I said, I'll let you know how much time you have with it, okay?
All right. I was born in East Cleveland. Went to Ohio's Northern and Ohio State. Moved to Colorado, moved to Denver. Then I got married there, had my only child there. Lived in Western Colorado as well. And in between, I did get that 2 years in Germany. I got 11 years in Vermont. And I've been in Shreveport less than 10 years, but I'm not sure how much less. I'm a widow. My stepdaughter lives here in Shreveport. My son is in South Carolina, as are his three children.
You want to stop there?
I can.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for sharing. All right, Davina, you're up. 5 minutes. Life story.
Life story. I grew up in a very small town in Texas called Shady Shores. When we moved there, there was about 350 people. The same lovely woman was mayor for 37 years. It was a great place to grow up because it was out in the country. My parents had actually chosen to move out of the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex because they wanted me and my sister to grow up out in the country with places to play. I went to public high school. I went to college in San Antonio. I got my PhD at Indiana University. My field is Latin and Greek. I love everything about the ancient world. There's so much to learn from the just amazing literature and so much to see that's not changed at all about human beings. I knew beginning in the third grade that I wanted to be a teacher, and I love teaching because I love being able to introduce students to new things and show them how they can accomplish things and do things that they never expected they would be able to do. So that's one of the things that's really cool for me. I love to travel into foreign countries. My favorite place on the planet is Turkey or the island of Cyprus. They're both just absolutely beautiful. Istanbul is a gorgeous city. The people are fantastic. I like to travel alone. I like to go and just talk with people. Just go in and have conversations and find out about their lives and get beyond what the news says about places. It's also very interesting to watch the news in foreign countries about the United States and see what they pick up on. I think that external view of our own country is important and interesting to see what is emphasized there as opposed to what is emphasized here. I am mom to two dogs, divorced, and happy to have four-legged babies around to entertain me.
Feeling good there?
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, both. Really, really great. Awesome. So since you went last, you will go first, Davina, with this next question. What is your earliest memory of politics? And there's no time limit on this.
You know, that's interesting because I immediately go back to the day that Ronald Reagan was shot, because I was in high school and I remember being horrified that the president, somebody had tried to shoot the president, and remembering one of my teachers and her daughter being happy, not caring that the president had been shot because of their political beliefs. And I just thought that was wrong. So that's probably the really first, the first thing that I remember, though I do remember in seventh grade there were teachers in school wearing black armbands because they did not like who had been elected governor. And I can't remember if they didn't like Bill Clements or they didn't like Mark White, but it was one of those. So those are my memories. It tends to come more from people's reactions in my academic space than really at home.
Right. Yeah. Those are places of influence, right? Especially as a child, there's a lot of adults. So
for sure.
All right. Thank you. Elizabeth, you have the floor for the same question. What is your earliest memory of politics?
Well, my parents, my dad was a farmer, and we had cattle, dairy cattle. And they were all incredibly conservative. And when I went to college, I switched horses and supported McGovern and was a member of SDS for a while. And then once I became a mother, I regained my conservative credentials because I did not, and now I am a registered Republican. And
um, What inspired the laughter there?
Well, I can remember watching the TV and seeing Reagan getting shot. But I was already, when I was in high school, was when Kennedy was shot.
Yeah.
So it has a different span of feelings about this whole thing.
That's kind of a little bit of dark irony, the same situation happening to do two different folks and what they represented to people at the, you know, at the height of their kind of presence in our history. So,
yeah.
Well, since you went last, you're going to go first. Elizabeth, the question is, can you tell me and Davina about someone who has been the kindest to you in your life?
Has been what to me?
The kindest to you in your life. Who's that person?
My whole Sunday school class, if I can say that.
Yeah.
When I left Germany and my son's family there and came to Shreveport, I came with nothing. I had given away everything that I had to different people on my way there, and so I was just I lived for 6 years, I think, in with my stepdaughter, sharing a bedroom with her and her two daughters. And when I got to a point that I just, she was moving to a smaller house, and she didn't have room for me. So I found the apartment I am in now and started moving in, and my Sunday school class and choir gave me what they called a pounding. And that meant that you bring a pound of this and a pound of that and filled up my little pantry and gave me furniture and a TV and just, I was stunned.
That's amazing. Absolutely.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And a wonderful act of kindness from a community, you know? Sometimes you expect it kind of one-on-one, but it's beautiful to see people to come together in kindness to support someone. So I'm glad that you had that. Davina, can you tell Elizabeth and I about someone who has been the kindest to you in your life?
You know, it's hard. It really does go back to teachers. I think that my undergraduate advisor, Dr. James Pierce, who was a very quiet man and very gentle, he dedicated a lot of time to me, which is something I have understood more and more as I'm now on the other side, being the teacher and giving time to students. And that's an amazing gift, because he taught extra classes because of me and really spent time thinking and guiding me. And then my dissertation director was an amazing woman who, not only through her teaching, but as a mentor and a friend later in life, she was always there when I needed to talk and ask questions about how to navigate things, and was always looking for opportunities for me in terms of jobs or publications or just people I should meet, really throughout my college career and as a faculty member. And I think Ellie, her name was Eleanor Leach. I think Ellie was really incredibly kind, because this is dedicating your life to people who aren't your family, but become your family. And I think I'm especially grateful for the time that these two teachers gave to me.
That's really great that you get an opportunity to kind of pay back some of that kindness in your role.
That's in my mind every day, every day.
Yeah, to keep it going.
Exactly.
Wonderful. All right. I'll pose this question, and then whoever wants to go first, go for it. This is the last of the kind of four I posed to kind of get things started. I'll still be here, and if I notice that there's any kind of rockiness, or if you all seem to kind of, you know, need some assistance, I can definitely jump in. But after this question, you all are free to kind of pose questions to each other, pose different topics to each other to explore and do those things that way. So the question is, and like I said, whoever wants to go first, go first. Why did you want to do this interview today?
Okay, I wanted to do this because the tone of exchange between people of different beliefs has gotten, it's become noise, it's become loud and hateful and not respectful. And I think it's very important that, not that everybody believe the same thing, but that we treat each other with respect and that we listen to each other and take time to consider the other person's views. You don't just, you know, my way or the highway. It's, here's why I think this. I want to understand why you think that. And where is the common ground? Because there always can be. And so I think that trying to be a part of changing the tone was very important to me.
Thank you, Davina. Elizabeth, why did you want to do this interview today?
Just a second.
Mm-hmm.
Getting a sip of water, and I didn't want to go down then. I think human beings are more complex than merely conservative or liberal or kinetic versus static, or action versus contemplation. Or, I mean, we're all on a bunch of different spectrums, different aspects of our lives. And it's very interesting to see how, where different people are and how they got there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Like I said, I'm going to take just a small step back. I think to kind of keep things moving forward, what you said about kind of finding out about people and how they got to where they're at is something that you all can kind of move through and work through to kind of get started. Yep. As you are.
Well, I would like to connect with Sabina about a project I am working on right now.
Which okay.
It's called the American Millennium Project. And that it started here in Shreveport. It has started about 20 years ago and blossomed a little bit and then we had 9/11. And then the chief instigator pulled in his horns for a while, and now he's going after it again, and it's in its first year. But what we are doing with this is organizing AMP, American Millennium Project clubs, wherein at the different high schools and colleges and the middle schools in our area, and then getting young people involved in these cultural and historical tours. There are two in fall semester and one in the spring for each club of about 25 students, and they will go to different cultural sites, different historic sites, right in their own parish, and learn more about what makes that parish unique. And in doing so, hopefully develop more of a sense of rootedness in the place where they live that is enables them to have a sturdier platform with which they then can build on from into their lives. So I thought it was something that you might, as you talk about Greek and Roman history, that this is also, we see that everywhere.
I think that project sounds really interesting. I hope that the learning about the history includes all of the history. I mean, we've got some very tough history in terms of slavery, in terms of lynching. I went to the Center for Equality and or the Equality and Justice Institute in Mississippi, and could track down the names of the men who were lynched here in Natchitoches Parish. Many students don't know about the Colfax slaughter in Colfax of Black men and women, the burning of businesses and things like that. I think it's great for students to get, or people to understand the history in this place, but I also think that they've got to go away. One of the challenges I've found with students in Louisiana, but not just in Louisiana, it's the place I've taught most, but they're just so locked into a single place and don't have the experience of the world. I mean, you've lived in Germany. That's amazing. Yeah. Some students, when I was teaching in New Orleans, hadn't, you know, the people on the West Bank didn't want to cross over into downtown because it was too scary. You know, to me, that's surprising and unfortunate. Why did you want? It is. It's also a disaster. I was living there during Katrina, and the poverty in this state and the poverty in that city was so visible because of the people who had no way to save themselves, and the failure of leadership to understand the depths of the poverty, because New Orleans is Mardi Gras. I mean, it's all about that. It's not about this culture that is built on a lot of poor people barely making it. And that's one of the things that I find very difficult about living in Louisiana, is seeing the amount of racism and the amount of poverty, and really not seeing enough people wanting to do anything about it.
What do you think is doing something about it?
For me, it's education, it's training. And to me, those are two different things. You train for a job, education is something that's broader. It's spending money going in and helping clean up neighborhoods, you know, using community block grants, not to build a nice new park, but to, you know, create houses that are actually able to be inhabited. You know, in Natchitoches itself, there are some neighborhoods that I didn't know existed until earlier this year when I was helping somebody run for a judge position and we were canvassing all over the place. And I saw some of these houses that I couldn't, it was hard to contemplate living in them. Yet these are people's homes. And so I think bringing some of the education, I do think raising the minimum wage is an important thing to do because one should be able to live. I'm not sure I think that $15 everywhere, but I think raising it to some extent because people shouldn't not be able to pay rent on a minimum wage job. And unfortunately, we have a lot of minimum wage jobs. So in certain places, that's going to be the majority of the employment. So I think doing something is reaching out on a lot of different levels and providing a lot of genuine encouragement. In your experience in the places you've lived, what have you liked most about them and what have you disliked most about someplace?
Well, I usually don't see we're living here as I don't see much racism, but when I read the local histories, I certainly do. I've been researching newspapers to build stories on that I come across that are interesting and having them published in a local community monthly, which is called Best of Times. It's really a senior publication. But so I could, for example, one of the stories I found was of a man who was pretty much a ne'er-do-well, and he was white. He was walking down the street, and nobody knows exactly. Everybody saw it happen, but what caused it, nobody seems to know. He ended up killing a young black man with a knife right there on the street in Seaflow. And he was arrested. And then he was tried, and he was acquitted. And I was appalled.
I understand that. Yeah. How does that make you look at some of the things that have happened more recently?
I have a number of friends who are black here in Shreveport, and I in my heart, I don't see them much differently than I see my white friends. But I do. If I am on, say, if I walk downtown Shreveport and I hear people yelling in a group, I get ready to take cover.
I absolutely understand that. I mean, people in a group, it there's a lack of respect and restraint in behavior towards individuals and towards strangers, that is widespread and very troubling, regardless of the skin color. But I guess, you know, when you tell me that story about the man in Shreveport, I think of George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery and the people who, the Black people, especially Black men, but Black women too, who have been killed by police or by citizens. And there doesn't seem to, they keep getting acquitted or not even charged. And I find that problematic because there doesn't seem like there is justice for killing someone who we can all see with the videos wasn't threatening anybody, wasn't trying to hurt anybody, but ends up being killed by police or by, like I said, citizens. And I guess I get concerned that there's not, that the justice system isn't fair and isn't right.
I tend to look at it a bit from the other side, in that when I was a child, I was living just south of East Cleveland, and I knew people from home. My mother's family was from Bohemia. We had a very large Jewish contingent, and I grew up hearing about Kristallnacht and and mob behavior, and wondering what I could do to not cut my phone. I think my best contribution was to raise a son who, when he went to Air Force basic training, he ended up, one of his bunk mates or roommates was a young Black man. And so when they started getting to know each other, they found they had identical silk shirts in their wardrobes. So the two of them went out one night after having bought identical sunglasses and wore those twin shirts and told people they were twins.
I love that. I love that. I had a student here who had the same name as my same last name as my ex-husband. She was African American, and so we referred to each other as cousins all the time because we just thought that was cool. I think that's lovely. Obviously, you have been a fabulous mom and having the experience of living different places and having a son who is so open to the people that he's working with and fighting with, and is just awesome. That's what I hope for my students, is that, because some of them come from very small places and haven't had a lot of experience with the world. And I teach at Northwestern State. I teach within the Honors College, but we get a very big mix of views, and encouraging when you see those kids that you know think very differently, going out to lunch together or hanging out and studying and things like that, it's really wonderful. It's what it should be. We recognize the human beingness in each other, and we can have differences, but that's not what's ultimately important. It's that I see you for who you are and value you, and hopefully you see the same in me. You said you heard a lot about Kristallnacht. Is this why you became interested in history?
Well, one of the earliest field trips that I remember was we were living in what used to be called, still is in some circles, the Western Reserve. Those are lands in the area of northeastern Ohio that were given to men who had fought in the War of 1812. And they then we went, the houses that they built were very often built with a hidden room, a passageway, or something else, as they were part of the Underground Railroad.
Oh, wow.
So just having been exposed to that sort of thing, when you're really small, gives you a whole lot of different ways of thinking about things.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's really cool. Yeah, I've always liked history. And I'm not sure why. I just have. Is there? Go ahead.
Well, I'm also really interested in how people survived, how they came from England or Germany or Italy and ended up on the East Coast and worked their way west with going to these different climates and learning how to adapt what they brought with them for its best use, and how to incorporate what they found. I spent two hunt camp seasons as a camp cook for people who had come to Western Colorado to shoot deer and elk, and cooking over. I cooked for a crew of 21 men, and on using two Coleman grills and a sheepherder stove, I cooked them. breakfast in the morning, and supper in the evening, which were always one-pot meals, and then sent them out with bag lunches when they were in a deer stand somewhere. But you think a lot when you're living in a tent, and you're shaving all your own kindling, and dipping water from a creek that you then carry up and use heat up for dishwashing. It's you think a lot about how people's lives have improved and changed.
That's funny. I spent my childhood, our family and friends vacation was going out to New Mexico and camping for 10 days to 2 weeks. And there would be 20 something of my parents' friends. And as I got older, my sister's job was to do the cooking and especially in the morning and helping with the dishes and all of that. So we mostly cooked over the campfire. My mom could make a heck of a cake on a campfire, which was really interesting. Yeah. It's still one of my favorite things. It was this dump cake that she would make, and she could do this in a Dutch oven. and let it bake in the campfire. She was amazing at these things, and she hated cooking, but she was really good at it. Yeah, that survival, it's interesting that, especially recently, certainly with power going out and water going out, and you think about at least these experiences with the hurricanes that we've had, and then with this latest ice storm, I've actually thought about how dependent we are on too many things outside us that we can't control, like electricity and mm-hmm. and the water coming in, and that it's that makes me want to feel more independent. My sister actually lives out in North Carolina.
I'm going to step in really quick to let you all know that you have 10 minutes left in the conversation, okay?
Gotcha. She lives in North Carolina. She just bought 12 acres, and she's really creating a farm and working on being self-sufficient, which I kind of envy a little bit. I think it's awesome. And if she'll let me, I'm going to retire in a tiny house on her property. You were raised conservative, and so was I. And then you became more liberal, and then you've come back.
Yeah.
And you've come back to being conservative.
Yeah.
Can you talk about why? What brought you more to the conservative side of things? And I guess, how do you define that?
When I was dating and when I was considering involvement, I thought it was okay to have a child on your own. Until I got around to having a baby. And when I thought about how I wanted to do that, even though I knew that the man that I did marry was I would probably not stay married to, I wanted that extra framework stuff of, the wedding ring, the change of name, the approval of society to give more stability to my son.
Okay. No, I understand that, especially, we see a lot we see the effect of the absence of fathers on sons and the absence of a husband and a household that is built around husband and wife and children. So that's, that's beautiful. That's about stability. It's about making sure you do the best for your child. And I can see that. I mean, I'm not sure most conservatives would necessarily stick just to that, but I think that's an important part. I mean, I had great parents. I had absolutely great parents. But the more I've taught, the more I've seen people who don't have great parents. And I see the negative effects, or don't have parents. The more I see the negative effects on children of parents who either don't care, don't understand what they're doing to their kids, or their children are really there for the parents' own glory or something like that. And in my hometown, when I was in school, there was a children's home. And I became friends with a lot of the kids who lived in that children's home, who had been thrown away by their parents, literally thrown away by their parents. And I think at that point I decided I never wanted to have children, because I knew that there were always children out there who needed love and support, and I could be the love and support for them that their parents obviously weren't going to be. So, and being a teacher has let me do that. Maybe more than I had wanted to.
My son was always bringing home children and animals that needed food and attention. And
yeah. You know, but
mommying, that stuff, you know?
Yeah, so it sounds like both of us kind of collected strays.
Yeah.
And I think that's a beautiful thing. That's an absolutely wonderful thing. So do you ever feel like, are you bothered by some of the ways that people who call themselves conservative express their beliefs and act?
I'm bothered sometimes by almost everybody. I mean, all of the people.
While I am a registered Democrat, I think no party has cornered the market on doing stupid things, inappropriate things, treating people inappropriately.
Well, there are times I just want to walk up to absolute strangers and say to them, why are you so effing rude?
I mean, yes. Don't be rude. There's no reason to be rude. Now, maybe somebody's having a bad day, but if somebody's having a bad day, they need to look at themselves. Yeah, it's that respectful, you know, especially the way that you see people treated in stores or restaurants or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this person is here to help you. Thank them for that. Don't yell at them because you didn't get your lunch served as quickly as you wanted. You don't know what else is going on in the kitchen, and it's probably not this person's doing. I think probably our water and power people have heard a lot of complaints recently when they can't control what the weather did to systems that have needed repairs for years. Nor can our leaders immediately fix them.
Well, we have lost somehow the ability to have foresight as to, okay, if I don't take care of this now, what could happen?
Mm-hmm. But we don't want to pay for it. And that's part of that's one of the biggest problems, I think, is you've got to invest in things and in people. And yeah, it's expensive.
Well, now, see, I'm on Social Security now. I do not have a car. I cook most of my meals myself. And I'm pretty independent. But I'm doing okay. I'm not living high on the hog. But I'm definitely not on the bottom of his hook either.
Right.
So, I know how to be careful. I don't think I need diamonds. I don't think I need to go to Disneyland. You know. I think our expectations. Maybe even because of our wonderful technology that exposes us to all these great things, that we don't connect expectation to reality very well.
Right. I think about five more minutes, okay?
Okay. I think you're absolutely right. I think you're absolutely, and I'm not sure we value the right things.
Right.
You know, I'm like you. I did just get a newer car, but the one I traded in was 14 years old and had 218,000 miles on it. Yeah, I have my parents' 1987 Toyota pickup, and it's only got 171,000 miles on it, but I'm not trading it in because I need it. The need for bling and fame and things like that. Live your life. Be a good person. You don't need the newest or the best, or you need good enough. You know, maybe a little extra to make you happy sometimes, little treats, but, you know, but making sure that people have enough is important. You know, Social Security is something that keeps being attacked, and my grandparents lived on it and did fine because, no, they weren't flashy, and they didn't. My grandfather had been a traveling minister with the Church of Christ his entire life, and my mom lived all over the United States because they traveled. And so it was about learning how to make do with what you had. And I mean, yeah, I like stuff, but I'm not attached to it. If I don't have a lot of the things, then that's fine. And there's a lot of things I just in fact don't need. So I don't worry about it. But yeah, but there are people who don't have enough, and that's the place where I feel like as a society we need to do better. You know, we need to help them be able to have enough on their own. But that takes some help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's real hard too to explain that good enough is good enough to someone who thinks that somehow or another they're entitled to a great deal more.
Yeah, and I think that's where your point about technology and you know, we're bombarded with all of these, you know, fancy things we should have. But no, we don't need those. All of that is not what's really important. And I think that's part of the problem, is that we don't value the things that are the basic: home, food, clothing. None of it needs to be fancy. But you need to have enough in order to be able to, you know, a hungry child can't focus as well. A child who's got no support at home in terms of doing homework or things like that, doesn't see a role model that is going to really help move them. So, you know, making sure that people have a basic comfort.
What is basic? Because some things, like women's underwear, for example. I can go one place and I can pick up six or eight, maybe if I'm really lucky, 10 pair of basic panties for $10.
Right.
But I can go to a shop, especially a shop, a SHOPPE shop.
Yes.
And I can spend $25 for one pair of drawers.
Right. No, that makes no sense to me. Exactly. We've become focused on the brand name or, right, you know, the fancy instead of here's what you need. This is about need. Let's get the needs taken care of, and then you can work on your wants, but keep the needs taken care of first.
I think that's a note that we're going to have to end on, okay?
Okay, Elizabeth, it's been wonderful. Thank you so much.